decision. I'll face the sunniest side head on. I had a vision of what it might be like to reach the accent.
Oh,
oh, okay. Ready? Go. Start the show, bitch.
All right. It is a very special episode, for crying out loud. It's a Saturday, and we have no Kaylin, and we're flying by the seat of our pants.
Kaylin is malingering.
Yeah.
At the ER.
Mm-hmm.
Now, malingering is a pretty good word. Do you know that vocabulary word?
Yes, and I just want to tell you that I've just had the most Judaic thought I've ever had in my life, and I caught it in real time. I was like, I don't want to talk about Kaylin's health situation because if it goes sideways, this is going to be so awful and
let's
sad.
Hope it doesn't,
because you'll hear this and you'll be like, remember when we were all laughing and we thought it was funny, and then it took a turn.
No. We don't think it's funny. It's just what's funny is how inept. Lynette, how Kaylin was like, "You guys, I'm in the ER," and we're like, "But who's going to produce our show though?"
We have a special guest in our studio today.
Yes, we do.
And that is the one and only Teresa Strasser.
I am here to always think about the worst case scenario in every situation and prepare you mentally for how things might go badly.
You know what people say about you, Teresa?
What?
They say she's a really good broadcaster.
Oh, yeah.
Professional.
What does that mean?
It means that your voice is soothing. You bring it. You understand what the people want. You know how to bring the drama, but also pull the drama from others.
Right.
You're a narrative storyteller.
Thank you.
Yes, you're a great writer.
Thank you.
An amazing writer, which is one of the reasons why you're here.
One of the many reasons. So I just want to say before, because you're not going to say it about yourself, but I want to say, you probably heard me say it, that you sent me the book. I don't want to make this about me, but I was in the middle of my own writing hell. And Teresa said, could you please read the book and possibly, you know, if you have time, like no pressure, like give me a blurb. And I was like, yes, I will. And then, but I was writing, you know how that feels. I was under so much pressure, but I started reading her book and I was like, oh my God, I cannot put it down. I was crying immediately. And then I was texting her just constantly, just going, oh my God, how am I going to continue writing when now I have, like, I have to live up to this?
Aww.
It's so good. It's beautiful. The writing is gorgeous, but the story is just like, I'm telling you, this girl knows how to write emotions.
Yes.
And make you cry.
Right. Wow, yeah.
Even happy tears. It's not like a super depressing. It's not depressing.
No, I thank you so much for saying that. My friend Ben Mankiewicz, who you may know from TCM, he's got a pocket square and he introduces movies, and his brother Josh Mankiewicz is on Dateline.
Oh yeah.
He and I worked together at TMZ for like 6 months, and it was like a bond that for life will be because it was so horrendous for both of us. There's nothing wrong with that show. It's just we shouldn't have been there.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew it immediately. And so we're like, oh my God, we're going to get fired. Who's going to get fired first? How much do you make? How much do you make?
I want to hear. So you were like writing gossip?
Yes. But oh, sorry. Ben was like, people are going to think your book's really depressing. You have to like make sure that people know that it's funny. You have to, like, people don't want something that's too griefy. So yes, it's not too griefy. It's got baseball. It takes place during the course of one single season of Little League that I watched with my dad, after my brother died, and my dad and I sort of accidentally turned Little League into our grief group. But there's a lot of baseball in between. So there are a lot of scenes. In fact, my, grief counselor, it sounds like I have a regular grief counselor, but I go to her like once every month or every 6 months or whenever I need grief counseling. But I was going to her a lot when my brother was terminal, which was for 6 months. So they said he had 6 months to live, and he lived 6 months and 10 days. 6 months would have been on his 7-year-old's birthday. So I was really happy he didn't die on that day. Hey, Ben, I just made it too griefy. I fucking just did that. Sorry.
Never too griefy.
I swear it's not all that depressing. But I was talking to her and I was telling her about the book, and she said, oh, that's adaptive oscillation. It's like, what's that? Well, she treats people who are grieving, like she treats really intense, awful grief situations. She's amazing at it. And she treats a lot of kids.
and who've had like awful death situations in their lives. And she said adaptive oscillation, for example, she tells people, if you can go back to work, you should. If you can, you should, mm-hmm. because you need a break from your grief. So you can go in and out of feeling awful. And I would say that's true of anything traumatic, a divorce, something mm-hmm. that's really like you need breaks from thinking about it.
Yes.
And so I guess I naturally fell into a rhythm in telling the story where something is intense and it's painful. And but the season of baseball is a framework. Mm-hmm. And so it goes back and forth in time. Mm-hmm. So you return to Little League and me and my dad talking shit about 10-year-olds.
Right.
And him day drinking at the trailer park.
I love that.
So it's not like, yeah. Stephanie knows. So like you may shed a tear. But it's not like this book is unbearable.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Teresa's obviously a naturally funny person right. and a funny writer. So there's lots of funny scenes. There's laugh out loud moments for sure.
Thank you. And I will say there was, so when you write a book, and Stephanie knows this, your publisher asks you to get blurbs. Mm-hmm. So you have to reach out to notable people. And it's horrendous if you're an introvert, which I am. It's so terrifying. And so Stephanie was like a safe person. Right. I was like, she's going to be my first person. And aww. Then you were so fucking nice to me and you were so nice about the book. And I will say that you were on Penguin, my publisher's list of people
really?
That they wanted. There was a list of like funny female writers. And I saw Stephanie Wilder Taylor. I'm like, oh, I know that bitch.
You're like gettable, highly gettable.
And then your blurb was so beautiful. And you know, not that many people had seen my book when you saw it. So it felt very vulnerable. I was just so relieved that you liked it.
Well, I just want to say that I felt a lot of writing pressure to write your blurb. Because I was like, here I am, like the writer who's writing the blurb that you went to. And I'm like, what if my blurb sucks?
You too, man.
I gave you like four of them. I was like, just pick whatever you want or combine them or rewrite my blurb.
Stephanie knows this, but Lynette, this might be a surprise to you. Mm-hmm. Do you know, you see blurbs like on the cover of a book. It'll say, you know.
Yeah.
This is a whatever. This mm-hmm. is the best book I've ever read.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This book isn't too griefy.
Yeah.
Ben Mankiewicz. But you have to ask people, and a lot of that process, at least for me, when you're a low-level writer like me, mm-hmm. you write the blurbs yourself, and then you submit them.
Oh, I see.
And then somebody chooses one to take all of the calorie burning out of it.
Oh, you know interesting. What
I
mean?
That's how I got for my first book. I got a blurb which went on the cover, and in retrospect, I don't know if it was that helpful, but at the time, my first book was a pregnancy, humorous pregnancy, mm-hmm. Like a collection of essays, and mm-hmm. the person who had the biggest pregnancy book was Jenny McCarthy.
Yeah. Yeah, I was explaining my baby.
Yeah, Jenny mm-hmm. McCarthy was like the biggest blurb you could get because she had the most successful
right,
pregnancy.
That's right.
That book, Belly Loss, that motherfucker still sells. Like wow. that book is hugely successful. So to get hers, I'm like, I have to write a blurb that's so funny. She's going to want to have said it. Right. And that's how I got her. I think it's not even that good. I mean, I wrote 10 and they were all equal. I don't know.
You're a game show writer. So you're like, I'll submit 10.
You guys are game show writers.
Yeah, I'll submit 10. I did. I was like,
she'll kill 9 of them.
I was like, you'll kill 9. Here's an alt and another alt and another alt. You got to do this for me, Jenny. I think it was, I read her book and I think I absorbed her style because mm-hmm. you've got to write the blurb in the style of the person.
Yeah.
Right.
I laughed so hard I took a shit on the table.
Yeah. Oh, it's so close. It's so close. It was, I laughed my ass off, which is great because now I don't have stretch marks.
Oh, yeah,
like
that's
it.
Good.
Like it.
That's yeah. great.
And so she goes, you know, I'll take
and she gets number the credit.
Four.
Yeah. Wow, makes her look witty.
But it was really nice of her, actually, of course. Because she didn't need you to do that.
Right.
I got a blurb from Cal Ripken Jr. That's
amazing.
That was amazing.
I saw that. Yeah, that's awesome.
I had to work my connection to Google.
Oh, is that what you did?
Yeah.
Oh.
I Googled how to reach Cal Ripken Jr.
That's how you got him?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I thought you're shy.
I know, but when I'm shy in person,
right?
But I'm a different person when I'm writing. Yes. I'm very uninhibited when I'm writing. I don't give a fuck what anybody thinks. When I'm in a room here, I'm like terrified to do or say something weird or inappropriate or basic or stupid mm-hmm. or unfunny or mm-hmm. embarrassing. Mm-hmm. But on the page, I don't have any of that. I'm a different person.
Yeah, because you're great. You're a good writer. You know, Thanks. You're confident.
That's
Thanks.
Amazing.
So maybe yeah, wrote reason,
we didn't even say the name of the book, by the way.
Making It Home, Life Lessons from a Season of Little League.
Yes, and available now on go to Amazon.
Little
right?
gossipy Anywhere. Story for you about my, about so first blurb I had was Molly Shannon, because I had a
that's a great
friend
blurb.
Of a friend. She was a it was a great quote. She and she I honestly don't know if she'd read The Galley. I don't know, but second book. So Chelsea, I was friends with Chelsea Handler.
That was the, right. by the way, getting Chelsea, that's the blurb. Like at that point in time, and even now, right. but especially then, if you had a Chelsea blurb on the cover of your book, it was a bestseller.
But here's the problem. Do you want to hear the
I want all
the problem
of this. Yes. With,
so Chelsea was my friend, kind of, when the first book came out. But when the second, so when the second book was coming out, I guess we were still friends at that point, and then she sort of blew me off. But right before that, she'd given me a blurb, kind of before she blew me off. And I'd asked her if I could use a blurb for the cover. And she said yes. And then I had to write myself the blurb, which my editor, Patrick Price, shout out to Patrick. Tenalt? He wrote me a really funny one. And it was very much in Chelsea's voice. He's really funny. So she approved the quote. Anyway, it goes out. The first copies of the book have her quote. She contacts me and legal, like I don't remember. I mean, this I've tried to block out the story, but basically she said you can't use my quote on the cover of the book. I never said you could use it on the cover. Nobody ever, my name is not on the cover of anybody's book but my own, and made them reprint.
Oh my God. Holy shit.
My jaw is dropping right
now. That's insane.
It was so embarrassing because I was supposed to be friends with her too. You know what I mean? Like why people were like, my book company was like, why is she being such a hard ass? Why is she threatening like legal action?
That's
and
insane.
I was like, I don't know.
I had a very bizarre experience that I was going to talk about more on Patreon. Ooh. And when it happened, Stephanie, I really wanted to call you because you've written a lot more books than I have and you know this world better. I don't know who to talk about it with, but maybe, listen, maybe Patreon. I'll give you the broad strokes here.
Okay.
And then on Patreon, you can, that's what you call a deep tease.
That's okay. Right.
You remember how you said I was a good broadcaster?
Yes.
Tease. Look at me teasing it. But
okay, wait. So before you tell that story, let's talk about our first sponsor of the day, which is Organifi.
Organifi.
I don't know if you've tried Organifi, but Lynette especially and I love it.
If you're into, you know, just having a healthy drink a couple times a day, they have different flavors and styles. Tell us about the...
It's a healthy, it's like a, you know, energy. It supports rest and relaxation, healthy immune response. It's, you add it to, you can, there's different kinds. There's a red juice. Mm-hmm. There's a...
The red juice is for energy, gives you natural energy.
Yeah. There's Organifi Gold, which you can mix into a tea. You can put it in warm milk.
That's to help promote sleep, better sleep.
It's all natural. Kalen loves it because he was drinking a bunch of like Red Bulls and stuff like that and then getting that bad feeling, like too much energy. This is completely natural. We love it. My husband takes it for the gym.
Yeah, that's nice.
The green juice.
To-go pop packs.
Oh my gosh. They have a whole kit where you can get a little bit of everything.
Yeah. A sampler platter. I want that.
Yeah, it's great.
Sunrise to Sunset, I believe it's called.
Yeah.
You know what you should do is go to their website, go to Organifi.com/FCOL and get 20% off your order. It's Organifi, Organifi.com/FCOL, and you'll get 20% off. I swear to God, we swear by this.
Yes. Love it. It's great.
Okay. All right. Tell us.
Yes.
All right.
Deep tease.
I just have to interrupt myself to say that, Lynette, I'm so fucking happy to see you.
I'm just so happy to see you, too.
Happy to see you. I know a lot's changed for you since I've seen you last.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
A lot of change.
I'm happy.
Aww,
happy
thank
to
you.
See you.
Let's acknowledge that you two started this show and you stood.
Yeah. That's
you,
right.
You, it was you two. I was a guest on your show. I loved it. You guys, and I remember thinking, like, these guys.
I idolized Lynette when I was little.
Aw, Teresa.
When you were little. When I was little, I idolized Lynette because
You were so, like, you were family to us. And I've been going through old emails recently because of stuff. And I found so many emails from us in, like, exchanges with you and I about the show, about our podcast, when we had our meeting at your house before we launched. Remember
with
that?
With Kathy?
Yes, with Kathy.
You ever talked to Kathy and Donnie?
Oh, hell no. They sued us.
Fuck those fuckers.
I know. You said it.
Fuck Sandra. Those fuckers.
This is just such a tea-filled episode. I know, really.
Fuck. I'm spilling it all. Yeah, let's spill. But, you know,
that you won't have to worry about again.
There's so many. Right? Why?
I'm spilling all the tea, and then I will never be heard from on this show.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, right.
No, well, who cares?
That's okay. No, go ahead. It's fine.
Yeah. No, I remember coming over to the house in the Hollywood Hills. Mm-hmm. Is that where you would describe it? Yeah. That had the pool and you could see the pool through the bar.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm a lowly mechanic's daughter. When I had not seen anything like that in my life.
Yeah.
And Adam was my boss. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God.
And
I'm
he
so
loved
nervous.
You. He loves you to this day. Well, last I talked to him.
He was real. Thanks. He was really good to me. I was just thinking about the day he called when Danny Bonaducci was being removed from his post. And I've been thinking about Danny because I read yesterday that he's having brain surgery.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's had some.
I've heard that he's had some health issues.
Yeah, some like neurological things are very difficult to diagnose. And I don't think they know what's wrong with him. And he, by the way, I've got no shit to talk about him. He was really good to me.
Yeah,
and was. I also think he's an entertaining broadcaster. And I know that's not a popular opinion with Corolla fans. Right. It is a certain flavor. And it's not necessarily the people who like what Adam does that appreciate what Danny
does. I enjoyed it.
Right. But I enjoyed him, and he was very kind to me on a personal level. So I genuinely wish him well. But Adam called me, and I got a stomach ache because I saw his phone number, and that made me so nervous. And I was like, oh, fuck, I got to pick this up. And it was just him saying, I think that you should talk more. Mm-hmm. I think that you can pick up what Danny was doing. I don't think we need a Danny or a Damashek or anybody else.
Right.
I don't need anybody else. You be my Robin. Mm-hmm. Talk more, because all you need is reps and you'll be as good as anybody.
Yes, I remember.
And it just is one of those things that infiltrates your DNA on a level. And you're like, okay, well, he's really successful and he never bullshits.
Right.
So he's saying that.
Right, he means it.
Yeah, maybe I should talk more.
Yeah. And you did. And you were great. And the fans love you. It definitely.
Well, it's easy to love me now that I'm gone. It's like a country song. I can miss you now that you're gone. If I were back in 2 weeks, they'd be like, shut up. You talk too much. Don't step on Adam. Leave the jokes to Adam. But I was there, and you had kids before I did. And I just felt like I know this isn't true always, that it isn't always what it appears. But to me, everything seemed easy and casual, like the way you were with your kids, which just seemed like natural. And like you knew what you were doing, and you weren't agonizing over every little thing. Maybe you were, but it didn't look like it.
Well, thank you. Well, I mean, when you have twins, it's like, you know, like you just got to jump in and do it for the first time too. Like first time you have a child and you have two of them, you have no choice. You got to survive.
I remember Adam being upset that you wanted to pay for the family photos. And
really?
He, in his mind, you should be taking the family photos of the kids.
Oh, I took them to Sears.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he was like, you're wasting all that money? What does Sears take a charge?
Right. I know.
Yeah, he was not. I like a wealthy person that pinches a penny.
Yes. Well, he's got those pictures, by the way, hanging in his office. So you're welcome.
The Sears pictures?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's cute.
Hilarious. Oh, yeah.
So read my blurb of the... So here's something that I don't like. I don't like this fact, but this is a fact.
Okay.
The men who I reached out to for blurbs were amazingly generous. Like Cal Ripken Jr. is probably one of the greatest athletes that's ever lived. He has a consecutive game streak record that will not be broken ever.
He's a basketball player, right?
I was going to say, Teresa, were you into baseball before your kids?
I did not. I watched my brother when he played. He played Little League. He was an all-star nearby in Santa Monica. So I watched him, and I get really nervous watching him and nervous when he was
at the plate and nervous when he was at first base. He was a lefty like my son, Nate, which this Making It Home is about. It's about like sort of the resurrection of my brother that happened during this season. They were born on the same day, September 24th.
Wow.
Isn't that wild?
Both lefties and both love baseball and kind of like they have the same walk.
Interesting.
You know, that's like a genetic thing where there's a certain kind of heel-toe gait. And like Nate, who's now 13, the season takes place when he was 9. When he's thinking and he kind of looks up, it looks exactly like my brother.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're very similar, even though they didn't really know each other very well. I mean,
that's wild.
I have like pictures of my brother Morgan holding Nate, you know, and Nate, you know, we went to visit a lot when my brother was sick. But Nate was, you know, little and whatever, but there's just like a through line genetically.
Yeah.
And also baseball's a weird thing because I know you guys are huge sports fans. So I'm telling you something you already know.
Yeah.
Stephanie, I'm going to blow your mind. Okay. You know there's a lot of sports. You got your soccer, your football, and your hockey.
Golf.
Golf.
Bowling.
Bowling. Here's the thing.
Pickleball.
Sweeping the fucking nation.
You see, it is.
My dad plays every day. Won't shut up about it. Baseball has no clock. So it's mathematically feasible for a baseball game to go on forever.
Right. So what do they do if it's really just going on way too long? They just
Have been rescheduled. Like a World Series has been rescheduled. Like if it's raining, You start by, you know, so it hasn't happened, but it's mathematically possible. So there's a feeling that it's immortal, that it's connecting the living with the dead. And that's why there's Field of Dreams and Angels in the Outfield, because there's something about it.
I'm not just saying this, but movie rights are going to be sold to your book. It is so cinematic. The book is very cinematic.
That's
and touching,
exciting.
But a big story, but also a very small story. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's my dream. I think Henry Winkler shaves his head, plays my dad, wins an Oscar.
Ooh.
Yes, girl. He's so good, and he's so nice.
He's so nice.
He would love this book. How did I get it to Henry?
I know.
I tweet at him.
Should I?
You should ask.
Yes. I've worked for Henry, and he's a very nice, approachable man.
Don't you think it's time for him to do a serious, dramatic role?
Well, he's on Barry, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's very good on
comedic?
That. It's comedic.
Is it comedic? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, you got to have chops.
This could also be comedic.
Yes. This is both.
Your dad's kind of funny
he's
in this book.
He is funny. He's grumpy. He's cantankerous.
He
drinks the Kirkland tequila to take the edge off. He's got ear hair, nose hair, wears lycra.
You know what I loved? And then we'll get back. I know we're getting to blurb talk, Ace Cal Rifkin talk. But I just wanted to say that one thing that I really appreciated about the book is that even though your dad is still alive and you knew would be reading this book, she doesn't hold back. Like there's a lot of mixed feelings about the dad. And I felt like I've written books and had to talk about my relationship with like my parents. And I just love that you didn't really hold back but it was still controlled. It wasn't like you were writing. And I talk about this a lot with like writing students. You weren't writing at him, but you were writing as if he wasn't reading it, even though I'm sure you knew he was going to read it. But that means that like he was going to have to like stand tough and hear what you had to say, but also with so much love. So, you know, but with the, I love when you were talking about almost like having your dad kind of give you the ick. Like, I can't be around him. Like, I'm getting, it's so uncomfortable sometimes. And I think that's such an important thing to be honest about.
Well, I was very embarrassed a lot of times, especially when he first came to live in Phoenix with us after my brother died. Like, well, what do you, you know, you might as well come live near us. Mm-hmm. And, it's a nice community. The book is about Arcadia Little League. Arcadia is like a very Range Rover kind of place. Mm-hmm. And other people's dads belong to country clubs. And my dad would take his bike to the game. Okay, he does not have a car. He exclusively rides a bike. I don't know if you guys have heard this, but Phoenix can be pretty hot.
Uh-huh.
So he'd show up there and then he wouldn't have a bike cover, but he'd want to cover his bike to protect it. So he'd use a sheet. Like a lime, you could use a white sheet, but why when you got a lime green Was it a fitted sheet? Yes.
Oh my God.
So we take the lime green. Sense. So it's like, there's my dad's bike in the outfield where he'd lock it up for all everyone and their Range Rovers to see. Jesus. And a lime green sheet over it, like neon where you couldn't miss it. And then he would wear the Lycra. And like, you don't want to see a man who's 75 and you see his ball outline. And then he doesn't have a lot of his teeth, for real, real. Like, he doesn't, I'm not exaggerating. Uh-huh. And then he shaves his head because he doesn't want to pay for haircuts.
Smart.
So he's like bald, but often, like, he uses to shave it, he uses the razors from the 99 cents only store.
Of course.
So there's always like scabs. Okay. And a lot of times there's blood, like a right. crusty blood drip on his head.
Right.
Then a lot of nose hair.
Yeah.
Ear hair. Then after my brother died, he developed blepharospasms, which is like it's neurological. It's related to Parkinson's and it kind of comes and goes. And I feel like the dust at the ball field would really make it bad. And the spasms in his eyes would kind of like go down to his jaw. So like he'd catch your eye because he's like a 75-year-old in Lycra with his balls, like a tight outline. And then you're like, you look, and when you look, you're like, oh God, what's that guy fucking doing with his face? And he's just like, he's blinking and twitching. Yeah.
Oh my.
And then obviously he's in clothes from Walmart. And there's a lot, not that there's anything wrong with that, but he's got the Dickies.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always like crumbs, pretzel
right,
crumbs.
Right.
And it wasn't like what I had in mind. Right, you know, like right. I remember when I started working for Adam and he was so shocked because he just thought like, well, Teresa's dad must be like an English lit professor or something.
Yeah, right, right.
Or a doctor.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Because like Jews don't live in trailer parks and fix cars.
Right.
But
Adam likes that better, though.
Yeah. I had the real blue collar upbringing.
Yeah.
Like my dad always had the grease under his nail. Yeah. Like mechanics have a certain kind of soap. It's like mm-hmm. a pumicey. It's right. in a bucket. It's on the, you know, yep. I could like still smell that.
It.
Yeah. yeah. But I love being in my dad's garage. I mm-hmm. was real happy. I worshipped my dad when I was little because I didn't live with him. So I always wanted to be around
right.
him.
Oh, yeah. And what does he think about the book?
Oh, well, thank you for saying that. I think it's a pretty fair portrayal of him. He ultimately is kind of the hero of the story, which wasn't my intention. I intended for that to be me and how fucking great I am. Look at me getting over grief and learning all about baseball because right. I really wasn't an expert. I had to learn to speak baseball.
Yeah.
And then, you know, maybe a half or three quarters of the way through the book, I was like, oh, if this is the hero's journey, the hero's my dad.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's the one that travels away from home right. and returns a different person. And the way that he did and does grief, like if you think about what he's been through, like mm-hmm. It's very hard for me to think of it from his perspective.
Right.
And the fact of him giving me the ick, I was just thinking that when somebody is sick, and especially a long illness like cancer, there's just a lot of awful times where you're crammed in an awful hospital room
mm-hmm.
or an awful rehab center where they send, you know, because he couldn't go home and my sister-in-law couldn't take care of him. It's like he was big and you can't like move him around and stuff. So we had to find all these places to like warehouse him in between being in ICUs. And this went on. He was terminal for 6 months, but he was sick the second time for maybe 2 years. And my dad quit working, was with my brother all the time, would stay in his hotel room for literally like weeks on end and shower at the hospital.
Wow.
Yeah. So like what he owed, he repaid.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Wow.
Yeah.
But it doesn't take away from the fact that he owed and you have resentments from being young, which you talked about in the book, and you had some shitty things happen in your upbringing, which I know, look, I know from having chaotic childhood stuff that you try to be fair. You try to not write about stuff coming mm-hmm. from like being that age and like, I'm so mad. And like, again, writing at the person, which you did not do, but you had to give an honest portrayal of the things that you were still dealing with resentment. So it's really hard to just step out of your own story and go, yeah, but he's great now and he was great to my brother. Like you've got to.
But that's a very uninteresting story. It's only interesting when you really cut down to the bone. Like
right.
what really was it like and why was I resent? When, by the way, speaking of having the ick, my brother and I used to text back and forth because my dad's fucking chewing was so loud and annoying and we'd be in a tiny hospital room.
like, mm-hmm. you know, hour after hour after hour. And my dad's sound of his chewing, and I'd be texting and be like, it's really bad right now. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. It's, and I have all these old texts from him still in my phone of like, how's dad? Is he, because at one point my dad was reading like a 700 page biography of Herbert Hoover. Uh-huh. And so he would start talking to you about Herbert Hoover, mm-hmm. and it would go on for like 45 minutes, and he would not be able to take in that you were not listening and that you were, and he was like, right. Herbert Hoover, 700 pages. And I would text my brother like, is dad talking about Herbert? Is he talking to you longer than the actual term of Herbert Hoover? Do you wish he had never been elected?
Did your brother ever go, dude, I only have 6 months?
It feels like, hey, wait, this is making my life feel longer. This is great, dad.
Yes, go on.
Tell
go
me
on.
More.
Right.
Did he have a second term? I think he did. I'm not good with my presidential. But I did learn a lot about baseball. In fact, there's a lot of scenes in the book, Making It Home. Life lessons from a season of Little League, where
just
my dad
take a moment and go buy the book.
Yes,
thank you. It's in paperback, straight to paperback.
Yes, that's awesome.
Yeah, so you learned a lot about baseball.
Yeah, like there are things that are you have to learn. Like for example, what is a murderer's row?
Yes, I've heard about that.
I'm going to guess. Can I guess,
please?
Because is it when you have a bunch of good pitchers coming up?
That is so close.
Oh.
That is really close.
Is it when the crows come and dive onto the...
That's a good guess because a group of crows is a murder.
Right, right.
A murderer's row is a lineup that's really good. Like your leadoff hitter, your number two.
That's what I just said. Right,
the cleanup. You said pitchers.
Oh,
they
I
throw
meant batters.
The ball.
No. I meant batters,
no,
like
you
all
did
your
it.
Batters.
No,
yes,
you did
I, why would
no,
I say didn't. Pitchers?
I think I feel it. I sense
why
that
would I say
she
pitchers?
Did.
She
did.
One
I
pitcher.
Know, kidding.
Like, why would it, a murderer's row? Like, you have eight, like the pitchers are eight deep.
Right. If you pitch, have to go to your batters. Eighth pitcher, shit has gone very wrong.
Very wrong.
You do not want that. But in Little League, you sometimes do have to go pretty deep into your bullpen. Mm. There's also a battery. That's the combination of the pitcher and catcher. I didn't know what that was. The confusing thing to me was the take sign. Like my dad would go, oh, coach. My husband was coaching. Coach has the take sign. I'm like, oh, take the pitch? Yeah, take the pitch. So swing at the pitch? No. Leave the take means leave. A take. Like if you see a kid in the batter's box, mm-hmm. right? And a pitch comes in and the kid doesn't swing, you'll hear a lot of good take.
Right.
That okay. means it's good that you
that
didn't
you
swing.
You didn't swing it. Right. Got it.
That's confusing. I don't like
that's
that.
That's like a who's on first. What do you mean take is leave?
I know. That's
what?
Did you travel with the team?
Well,
do a lot of
that year they did do All-Stars. Nate did All-Stars.
Did they go to like Georgetown on the East Coast?
Well, since that season, Nate still plays. He's now heading into he's 13, but next season will be his 14U season.
Wow.
So we've done a lot of traveling with him, you know, mm-hmm. like Vegas, California, yeah. mm-hmm. all over Arizona.
Right.
And it's probably a horrible idea because he's a pitcher and there's a lot of arm injuries that happen from living in a warm climate like here in California, like pitching too much. Mm-hmm. So you try to limit it, mm-hmm. you know, to like 75 pitches. Stephanie knows.
I know all about that, yeah.
But he's big.
75
he's
or under.
It's hard because he's talented and he's a big lefty and that's what right. coaches like to see. And so it's hard to not use him if you have him. Mm-hmm. In your bullpen. Mm-hmm. So as parents, and it's also like, here's a sort of a deeper issue that I think pertains to any parent, whether your kid is good at chess or baseball, mm-hmm. or in your case, volleyball, mm-hmm. or debate team. Right. There's a part of your ego that's like, I made that.
Yes.
I fucking made
that's
that fucking human being. Right. I'm the mother of fucking dragons.
Yeah.
And you become so attached.
Yes.
Like, and I don't want to admit that to myself because I'm not like a baseball dad where I need my kid to home right. run. But I'm like worse. I'm worse.
Right.
You know, because I love it.
Yes.
Like I love being Nate's mom. And
right.
then at times when he's struggling or in a slump, I feel so like deeply for him mm-hmm. that it hurts way more than it should. And I worry about it yes. way more than I should. What is volleyball
oh,
like
yeah.
that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She was doing, I mean, she just was so into volleyball, and that's all she, like, she was so disciplined. She was so, I never had to go like, okay, we got to get up and let's go to the tournament. She'd be like up in the morning making her eggs and doing her, you know. So, but then when I'd go to the tournament, I'd watch her and I'm like, oh my God, that's my daughter. Like, she's kicking ass, you know. It's just so, it's so fun. But then when she had this issue with a coach at school that just crushed her spirit. And she got burned out, and she recently quit.
She quit.
Yes.
That's it.
But she quit. But she's now filling her time with going to Barry's boot camp 3 days a week, 6 a.m., and going to Jump Lab, which is where she was going for conditioning for volleyball and stuff. Still doing that.
Vert training?
Yes.
Vert. You can tell I'm an athlete mom.
Yeah, yeah.
Vert training.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
So it's just that coach, though? Maybe she'll go back to it.
Well, she's going into senior year, and she's just not. She does not want to play. It's the coach at high school. So she was on the high school team, and she was also on a traveling club team. So, but she just quit all around. She just got burned out.
I understand. I think that's a big danger with the club sports. It's too much. It's all year round. It's not just a seasonal. In our day, you played during volleyball season.
Right.
And then you couldn't wait for the next year to do it again. And now it's everything
all
the time.
Long. Yeah, all year round. Yeah.
So Cal Rifkin, you got him.
I Googled how to reach Cal Rifkin.
That's hilarious.
So I still can't believe it. When I wrote a letter to, I found like 10 email addresses, and I wrote to every single one of them like a weirdo. I locked myself in my office, and I was like, I'm going to give this my best swing. I'm swinging big daddy hacks only. Yeah. I'm swinging for the fences. Like, if I can get Cal Ripken Jr., because according to my publisher, it's women who buy books. Mm. So even though I semi knew a baseball player who's very famous named Kirk Gibson, he very famously hit this World Series home run. And if you guys haven't seen it, you should YouTube it, even if you don't give a fuck about baseball, because he had two injured legs. It was like a hamstring and a knee, and he wasn't supposed to come in. It was like at the end of his career. He was old, World Series. And the skipper, you know, calls him in, and he cannot run. He's so injured. He can only hit a home run, because, as you know, then you can take 20 minutes to run around the bases. He had to hit one out, and he does. So it's like one of the greatest moments ever in baseball, but people do not know his name unless they're baseball fans.
Right.
Women who might buy my book, like, it won't have meaning to them, which it should. Everybody should know Kirk Gibson. He's like an incredible athlete and a great guy. He raises a lot of money. He has Parkinson's. And I know him because I hosted a benefit for his foundation in Detroit. But I would tell people, like, and they go, who? Like, a lot of baseball moms, they didn't know that, but everybody knows Cal Ripken Jr. because of his, he also has a sports league for kids. It's like a little league, and he just has a record that won't be broken. So everybody knows his name. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was like, I could envision it. I'm like, I see it. I'm going to have to manifest this like Oprah. One of the people wrote me back. And I was like, oh my God. And then I wrote another letter that I crafted. Like, I spent longer on the second letter than I did on like chapters of my book. Like, I mean, I like wrote it and rewrote it and honed it. And then he said, well, Cal's traveling. Let me pass this along. And I waited and waited. And a couple weeks later, we exchanged a couple more, you know, things. I sent him the book. And then I kind of had to put it out of my mind. And one day I opened my email, and all it said was, how's this? And then there was a blurb from Cal Ripken that was like, you know, a couple inches long.
Wow.
And it was stunning. Like, it was beautiful.
Wow.
And yeah, said, this is a wonderful book. It basically was like something it felt like I had written.
Right.
And then, yeah, I did a happy dance. That was,
I bet.
That was longer than his winning streak.
That's amazing.
And was your publisher impressed by that?
Yeah. I immediately texted to my agent, my publisher, but is this normal? And I'm going to confess something, and I'm not trying to be funny, nor am I trying to be cute.
Okay.
I really feel that he might take it back.
What?
I'm not, I might cry right now. I am dead serious.
Why?
It's just the way I'm wired.
Too good.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
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 No, he's
that's
not going to take
what,
it back.
I think your self-esteem issues.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Now, I want to get, we still haven't.
Oh, blurb, this blurb.
So let's take a quick break, because I don't know if a lot of people know this, but they're about to find out right now. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Speaking of getting therapy.
Yeah. Yes.
Can I talk about my Cal Ripken Jr. no backsies fears?
Yeah. We all, I think everybody can tell just by listening to this show that we all need therapy.
Right.
All three of my kids are currently in therapy. Mm-hmm. All three. Mm-hmm. Have their own therapist.
Yes.
Nobody even shares a therapist. We have so benefited from therapy. And you know what has been life-changing, which is what BetterHelp is all about, is doing the therapy over Zoom. We were all forced that way during COVID, but it turns out that it's really a great way to get therapy because you don't have to fight traffic. You don't have to find parking. People get anxious just getting to their therapy appointment, right? I think that's actually a barrier to seeking help for your mental health issues. Mm-hmm. But if you can just log right on to your Zoom and or to your, you know, online platform.
Yeah.
And get a hold of a great therapist. And another thing I love about BetterHelp is if you don't care for the therapist, if you're not connecting with the therapist, they will give you a different therapist.
Yes.
No questions asked.
You just fill out a form online, questionnaire, brief, and you get matched with the licensed therapist. And you,
absolutely.
No additional charge.
So if you're thinking of starting therapy, you really should give BetterHelp a try. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/FCOL today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/FCOL.
Yeah.
And while we're at talking about things that improve our lives.
I was looking at your eyelashes, okay, and Thrive Cosmetics have this eyelash extension. Liquid
I use
lash
that.
Extension.
I do use, that. I use the Thrive.
Yes, the blue. It's in the blue.
It's like best. Viral. Everyone's obsessed with it.
It's so great. And the thing that I love about it is when you wash it, it just comes right off, like the tubes.
Tubes.
Yes, yeah. It's the best.
Yeah,
and
just
they
use
also,
warm water and a washcloth.
Yeah,
comes right off.
Yes, and they also the thing that we love about Thrive Cosmetics is they have a mission. The cause in cosmetics is the name for a reason. As part of their mission, every purchase supports organizations that help communities thrive, such as battling domestic abuse, homelessness, cancer, etc. So you have to try Thrive Cosmetics to see for yourself. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order when you visit thrivecosmetics.com/FCOL. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/FCOL for 20% off your first order.
Do it.
Yeah.
Okay. So the men that you went to for
blurbs. Very successful. I had another vision. Everybody loves a baseball movie called Sandlot.
Yes, love that.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Yes, of course.
That's right.
And I was like, the people who might appreciate this book know the movie Sandlot.
Right.
I need that name on my book cover.
That's smart.
So, and also it's a very well-written movie. Mm-hmm. And I thought, like, let me hunt this guy down. His name is David Mickey Evans. And I found his website. It's like an abandoned amusement park. Like, it looks like no one's been there in a while.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's dusty. Like, it's rusty.
Right.
Stuff from 2015.
Yeah. There's like,
hey, come to my next event.
Mm-hmm. It's like the Cranberries are headlining. Come see Midnight Special.
Zombie.
Exactly. So, but it had a contact me. I was like, I don't know if this is going anywhere. Mm-hmm. I feel like David Mickey Evans, who wrote Sandlot, is kind of like the writer in Field of Dreams. Like, he doesn't want to be contacted. Mm-hmm. He's not trying to be contacted. He's not making himself available. He's not updating his website in the last.
Obviously.
I'm like, look, I got Cal Ripken Jr. So obviously miracles happen. Miracles are on my side. Mm-hmm. Angels are on my side. Maybe there's something about this story and my brother and like grief that and loss that it's not, you know, that like might help people.
Right.
And you know, if I can shine a light on that, maybe people will want to help me. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote a letter in the to the contact me, and I'm at my best when I really believe that no one's ever reading it.
Mm-hmm.
So as good as my letter was to Cal, my letter to David Mickey Evans was a masterpiece because I was like, no one's going to read this. Mm-hmm. And in it, I said, look, I'm going to level with you. Cal Ripken Jr. blurbed my book, and now I like, it's really ruined me because I'm now like so confident that I just think any miracles can happen. And that is why I'm bothering you. And then I had just, it ended with this paragraph that was two words, blame Cal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a couple of days passed by and I was like, oh my God, my inbox. And he goes, all caps, I never, ever, ever respond to emails like this. And then it said,
oh,
but you got me with blame Cal, LOL.
Oh my God.
Blame Cal.
This is a good story.
So Cal, in a way, was responsible for getting David McGammon. So he said, I've already vetted you. So just send me the book.
Oh.
And then we like started up a friendship.
No way.
He said, I really love your writing. It's like you're sitting here talking to me. And then he said, I've also written a grief book. Should we trade grief books? He wrote a novel, or it's kind of a memoir. It's hard to explain what it is. It's called The King of Pacoima, and he wrote the movie Radio Flyer.
Oh. Wait,
do you remember Radio Flyer?
Yes, mm-hmm. Of course.
That's based on a book called The King of Pacoima, which is about his childhood and his horrendous, abusive stepfather, who was played by Dennis Leary in the movie.
Wow.
And it's a great book. Yeah. Like, it's a beautiful book. It's like Steinbeck. Like, it's concise, it's muscular, it's efficient, it's beautiful. It'll break your heart, but it's not too griefy.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of became friends. No, that's how he became a big deal. Like, he wrote The King of Pacoima, and then I looked it up a while ago, but he sold the screenplay for $1 million, and then he wanted to direct it. And then he was removed because he was like a rookie director and Richard Donner took over, who's like mm-hmm. a big guy, you know, so it ended up being kind of a tricky situation for him. But yeah.
But that was Radio Flyer.
Radio Flyer was King of Pacoima.
Wow.
And the book is good.
It's beyond. I don't know why I'd never heard of it. I don't know why everyone hasn't read it.
I want to read it.
I know.
It's so good.
I like the title too.
Isn't that great? Yes. Yeah. So I guess he's from Pacoima.
Doesn't sound like a bad story.
No, well, I'm getting to the bad part. So I got him. By the way, I thought Dr. Drew would be great because to talk about grief and loss and how, you know, everyone grieves differently. For us, it was baseball. For you, it could be whatever it is. And he couldn't have been nicer. And in fact, he not only wrote me a blurb, he said, hey, I'm pretty good friends with Mike Piazza. Why don't you write a letter to Mike Piazza and some blurbs and I'll get it to him. And then he helped me like redraft it because he said it was too long for Piazza's attention span. Uh-huh. So I cut it down. You know, we did not get Piazza, but the fact that Dr. Drew offered that.
Right.
That like everybody was so nice, but then it was a lot harder with females.
Interesting.
And Stephanie was the lone exception. She immediately, in 2 seconds, she was like, yeah, I'll read your book.
That's
and then
my
two
girl.
Days later, she was like sending me, you know, like paragraphs she liked and like giving me so much positive reinforcement and feedback. She was the only one. I had a very hard time. She's the only female blurbed. I wanted this. this is kind of a weird. This I was not even, I don't know if this is spilling tea, but I'd be interested in your opinion. I'll get to the one of somebody who was really, really horrible.
Okay,
somebody
that's
was horrible.
For Patreon, right?
Yes. This person I don't think was horrible, but I had a very strong reaction to it.
Okay.
Do you know the writer Mary Carr?
Of course. Oh my. Okay, this is crazy, but I have a reference to Mary Carr in my book, in Drunkish, Loving and Leaving Alcohol, out in January. I literally reference her because I have a little story about her, but I don't tell the story about her. In the book exactly, but I did an really, really, really quick story. I did this interview because I don't know if this is negative about her, but I did this interview for not 60 minutes, so 2020.
Uh-huh.
And
what?
With Elizabeth Vargas.
Oh, because she quit drinking.
Yeah, but this was before she quit drinking. So this story is before she quit drinking. Only I had quit drinking at this point. Mary Carr, famously sober,
yes.
Many more years sober than me at the time. I was like 9 months sober and Mary Carr was like 20 years sober. And she wrote a book called Lit that is about
great
sobriety.
Book. Yes. That's my favorite of her books.
Okay.
Yeah. So I kind of boycott her now.
Oh, okay. Well,
but
I can't take it away. Lit is a great book.
Well, I can tell. I'll add in on your story, my little Mary Carr story, but suffice it to say that she wasn't, she was like, seemed a little bit annoyed with me when she met me.
Wait, where did you meet?
We were both being interviewed
for 60 for 2020.
2020.
Yeah,
we were both Elizabeth Vargas.
Yeah, so I met her and she was not rude to me at all, but she was like, she couldn't understand why I was being interviewed. I think she just didn't understand like why I was also being interviewed as an author.
I'm Mary Carr. Right. And who the fuck's this bitch?
Kind of. And she was also like, there was a lot of like program speak. Like she was very like, oh, you've been sober 9 months. She was like, I wasn't even able to function when I'd been sober 9 months. Like I was like, I couldn't even like, she almost like she didn't really believe that maybe I ever had a bad problem. Like it was kind of like, you're a faker. You're
like
a fake newbie.
Have you ever set yourself on fire and then eaten cat litter to survive?
Yes. And then also I was having a little girl crush on Elizabeth Vargas at the,
love
because
her.
She's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Married to, at the time, she was married to Mark Cohn, mm-hmm. who I was like, walking in Memphis. And I was like, and she's just so flipping pretty.
She is.
And she's so nice. And she was very focused on me when she, and I talked about that in the book, that I'm doing my interview and she's so locked in, like, and then what happened? And then what happened? Well, it turned out very shortly after that, she checked herself into rehab for alcohol addiction. So no one
likes to think that was you that helped.
I know it was. You 12-stepped her.
Except I later found out that after the interviews, and I thought she and I were just getting along famously. I was like, oh my gosh, like, does she? Anyway, I found out afterwards that she and Mary Carr went to lunch.
Oh,
and I was like, brutal. Brutal.
I don't know that. That's horrible.
I don't like that.
I'm so glad that you guys were having the reaction. And no, I was like, that's... so there you go right there. Mary Carr, very famous author. I'm nowhere in the same league.
Unbelievable.
So they of course they had lunch. Well, of course they had lunch.
Of course they did.
Now that the
now
they're best fucking friends. And then I wrote a letter to Elizabeth Vargas after she got sober through the producer.
Oh, nice.
Through a producer who was very close to her and who was the one who brought me onto the show, and I and she and I spoke like over email, and I was like, I'd love to like give my support, and she was like, write her an email and I will get it to her, and then she never wrote back, but that's okay. That's okay, because I still think she's lovely, but of course in my mind I'm like, the reason she didn't write back is because she's very busy hanging out with Mary Carr.
Oh, that's no lunch. That's exactly what I pictured.
Going
there's
to
no
meetings.
Way she has time for
yes. no.
Mary Carr is like her. Hey, I go to this meeting, you know, uptown.
Yeah.
2 o'clock on a Friday.
Cool people.
It's where they, you know what? You know how they have those 12-step meetings at people's houses that are private for celebrities?
Yes.
You know, Mary Carr is like, I go to the literary one.
Yes.
And
I think
you should come with me.
It's me, Tobias Wolff. There's just like, it's a very small group.
Well, or is it like, is Annie Lamott sober?
Anne Lamott.
Like,
yes,
Anne Lamott.
Anne Lamott.
Yeah, it's all them.
Yes.
All them.
Yes.
So I think this the story about the person who was legitimately awful. She was awful, and it's objective because my book agent is at CAA, and I actually had him get involved, and he deals with a lot of like really big successful people, and he was like, I can't even believe this. I can't
wow.
believe. With the
this
person,
is Mary Carr.
No, this is with the person. This is with the person that I deep teased that legitimately was awful.
Okay,
Mary Carr was not awful.
Okay,
let me be totally clear.
Yes,
I had an exaggerated emotional response to Mary Carr's rejection.
As clearly I right. had an exaggerated but emotional response.
I want to explain it to you, and I want you to tell me how you would feel.
Can't wait.
I know that this is on me. I know that this is on me. Okay.
We'll be the judge of that.
So I had had a lot of luck reaching out to people directly. And I thought, all right, here's what I'm going to do. Because CAA, who reps a lot of big people, and my agent, they reached out to people and had no luck. It's just, it's when it's a personal thing and I'm like, here's my story. I'm a big fan of yours. If you could support me. So I wrote a DM to Mary Carr, either on Twitter or Instagram. And I spent a lot of time on it. And, you know, I had had luck previously with doing this. And here's what's weird. There's a way that you can just not answer it. For example, I wrote to Amy Schumer because I don't know, she's like a mom and she's funny. And my agent was like, can you please get, not me, my publisher was like, Amy Schumer would be amazing. And I'm like, yeah, you're telling me. She's like 12 million, like how am I going to say? So like I wrote to her and I wrote to Guy O'Siri, who's her manager. So I'm like, well, he has 100,000 followers. So maybe that'll be easy. The fact that she didn't write back to me is how I want the world to be.
That is how the universe should work. Of
Maybe
course she didn't write back.
She
probably didn't even
see
it. Either. That's the thing. Yeah. Yes, Stephanie, you're right. This is right where I want you. I can tell myself, Amy Schumer didn't reject me or not like my story.
She didn't see it. A lot of famous people with a big following, you can go into their, they accept your message, but they might not see it. Right. I have like, also, if you have an account, like R for Crying Out Loud account has they hide some of the messages. You get like a ton of message requests and then you can put it in your general.
Right.
And like some of them I don't even see. And,
I've had that happen on Facebook. Like I had no idea that there's the message request that you don't see.
Me neither.
And like 3 years after my brother died, I was like, what's this? And I pressed it and I'm like, condolences. Oh, that was nice of like 50 people that I didn't get back to. Condolences. Yeah. And oh, thanks for that grief shot out of nowhere that I wasn't expecting. Now I'm in the past. Like it just happened.
Right.
Fuck you, Zuckerberg. So that's happened to everybody. Okay. So, but here's the thing. I feel that the most humane thing to do to a writer that's well beneath you and not as famous as you and whatever is to just simply not respond.
Yeah. Ignore.
Right.
Ignore.
And then I can think and assume that rightfully so. Of course she didn't see it. She has 11 million people who all think that they're her best friend writing her DMs. So in no way was I like Amy Schumer's a bitch. I worship her. She's amazing. And so is her manager. And I don't mind that neither of them got back. Of course they didn't get back to me. The weird thing that Mary Carr did is this.
Got back to you. I'm already cringing. This is already cringy.
Racing.
Okay.
As
now,
the kids would say.
If she had responded or her assistant or something and been like, she doesn't do that. For example, I tried to get Tuesdays with Maury, Mitch.
Oh, right.
And my agent reached out to his agent and got like a beautiful rejection. Like it was such a beautiful rejection that I'm still feel like I won because it just said that's a heck of a letter. And you know, Mitch has advised me a long time ago to turn down all of these requests because he gets so many, but like, this is a heck of a letter. And by the way, when the book comes out, send it. So it was like really
beautiful.
It was beautiful. Mary Carr did a weird in between. And here's what she did.
Oh boy.
Here's what she did. Okay. So I'm waiting and I'm waiting and I'm so nervous because she's Mary Carr and I just keep checking, like, did she return the message? And, I did get back a response. One word, no punctuation. No.
Oh, God.
What the fuck?
I felt like I had been punched in the stomach because, like, why would you go to the trouble of, right? Like, why not just just ignore me. Just ignore it. No.
Wow.
Yeah.
Then you'll always have plausible deniability. Like, you know, she'll always have plausible deniability. Yes. If you ever meet her at a party. But what that does is it takes you a step down the line where she knows, I'll never meet this bitch anywhere in person. I don't ever have to answer to this. I do what I want. I tell people I want. And she probably thinks she has really good boundaries.
Right. Do you think when she typed that, she was like, I, when you come to me, you slide into my DMs, you're going to hear about it.
Yes.
Because I have boundaries, okay? Because I go to Al-Anon too. Stay in your square.
Double winner.
Wow.
It just seemed like it was hurtful, but it wasn't. Like, it wasn't wrong.
But it's unnecessary.
Yeah, it's unnecessary.
But I think in her mind, it was like, well, I'm going to respond by telling you. No.
But why not just take the time to write a couple of, if you're going to take the time to write no and actually go into your request and go, oh, I'm going to answer this request with the word no. Why not say, sorry, I don't do any blurbs.
Yes. Right. Or how about good luck? No, but good luck.
Right.
That takes 2 seconds more.
Yes.
Or how about no with a period? But just like you're worth so little. You are so fucking nothing. You are a speck of shit on my shoe.
The only thing worse than no would have been nope.
God, so true.
Nope would have been, because it's like, that has a certain jauntiness to it. Like, nope.
Nope.
Nope. And how funny that you would even think that I would possibly entertain.
Yeah.
Nope.
Nope. Nope.
Wow. You know what? So I want to do a shout out to our people and then let us end the show so that because I want to record this Patreon while we're on the topic and then we're keeping you for our Friday show. So more Teresa Yes. For the Friday show.
A little goes a long way, Stephanie.
No.
We could keep
a little goes a little way.
We're kidnapping you.
We want a lot.
Today.
Yes. We want a lot.
Yes. So much more to talk about.
We're the opposite of no. We're just like, yes! All yes.
Yes.
Yes. We're yes.
S-S-S-S-S-S-S.
Oh my God. Okay, let's say hi to Ashley Sheik.
Oh, that's right.
And yeah. Leslie accosted me outside of
she did.
IKEA.
Again.
And my children.
Oh no.
Sex trafficked them. Jacob is so growly. Mm-hmm. Rita rocks that bassinet full of Elizabeth Williamson's kids. Mm-hmm. Hero.
Everybody loves Hero. It's Father's Day. Happy Father's Day
Happy
soon.
Happy Father's Day very, very soon. Athena.
She's got great makeup skills.
And dance moves. Yeah. Polly, we love your pancakes and your dessert. Mm-hmm. And Valerie, oh my
Hits
God.
It out of the park.
Yep.
That's right.
Making it home.
Our last way is Fenway, so.
Yes.
Is it Fenwick? Fenwick.
Yeah. Close enough. Katarina, check that molar. Gabby and Missy.
They're like still with one flip flop.
Yeah, you better buy Teresa's book to make up for your sassiness. Ishan Vajpayee.
He's a hot piece of ass.
Rebecca, no, but she's so cute. Kelly Brandt, she's not your aunt, but she'll still take you to Planned Parenthood. Yeah. Amy's a cunt. Erin Landho, Alicia Escalante. Leslie.
She's still coughing.
Sarah.
Stefano.
Jennifer, get up. Sandra, it's not easy being green. Krista.
We make you want to stroop.
And Stephanie's a stinker rinker. Also, my friend Adam Lerner can get you a car. And if you get a car from my friend Adam, I have a friend who's a car broker. Do you know what that is?
So you don't have to negotiate?
Yes. Does but all the legwork.
He does everything. If you're out of state, he will just send the car to you. He'll do all the negotiating, get the car, and it'll just roll up in your driveway. Nobody needs to be this day and age. People that think they have to go negotiate it, no, you don't. And if you live in California, it's free. There's no charge for it. The dealerships pay the charge. Anyway, give him a call or text him at 310-998-7048. He's helped a lot of our people already, and you're going to love talking to him. He'll educate you. Also, our friend Marin has a small bakery and gift shop on the island of Kauai called Sugar Skull. So if anyone's ever vacationing there, they can check it out or like and follow their Instagram page at SugarSkull808 and get 15% off if you use the code FCOL. Our friend Becky Barris. Yes. I don't know what today's date is, but it's only – this is going to go up on Tuesday. You might not make the cutoff for Father's Day. Oh, I think you will.
Yeah, you might.
If you get an order in by June 8th, she'll get it. She'll get you an order for Father's Day. You could do a t-shirt. You could do a mug.
Anything you want on a t-shirt, mug.
Just basicbecky.com or find her on Facebook at basicbecky, and we'll do the rest of them on Friday. And buy Teresa's book. If you don't listen to Friday, which I think you will, Making It Home, available on Amazon, everywhere. Wait, is there a subtitle?
Life Lessons from a Season of Little League.
Love it.
It's Tuesday. This is Tuesday right now in podcast world. Yes. The book drops today.
Oh my gosh. Congratulations.
Yeah. It's amazing. D-Day.
Everybody go get it.
Amazing.
And follow her on Insta. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Teresa Strasser, no H.
Nice. All right.
Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
You're a parent now.
Don't fuck it up.
There you go.